You're listening to Michigan Politics, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. This is the Michigan Politics, huh? Podcast. I don't know if you guys know that that's the name of it. I'm joined here by the Lansing staff of the Michigan Municipal League. I got three guests today: Chris Hackbarth, John Lamacchia, and Jennifer Rigtrink. Did I say that right? Look
you
at that.
Did.
Look at me.
Great job.
I'm terrible pronouncing names. Anybody listening to this podcast knows I usually slaughter names, but I have worked with you for a few years now, so I should know it. So you guys, I don't want you to get too inside the weeds on this. We're going to talk a little bit about politics today, but this podcast is for idiots like me that don't really know much about politics. So keep it real on the surface. If I knew everything like you guys do, it'd probably be called Michigan Politics. You know it, or something stupid like that. So That is the podcast. So I want to start off telling our listeners a little bit. Chris, you can start. What you guys do as our Lansing team for the Michigan Municipal League in Lansing.
Well, we like to joke that cities do everything except K-12 health and welfare issues, and we've even found we're burrowing into health and welfare and K-12 issues lately. So we pretty much get involved in everything on behalf of all of our members. So we try and split up responsibilities and handle specific issue areas.
So what's your issue area? What do you do?
So I handle all of our tax issues, revenue sharing, budget, labor issues, election law issues, things like that.
And John, what do you do?
Yeah, I get all the fun stuff.
We ask John what he does all the time.
Yeah, it's limited to transportation and infrastructure, so tiny issues there. And then I get to deal with water, energy, and environment, and a host of other things around common tech.
Okay, and Jen?
So I cover municipal services, police and fire, also anything planning, land use, zoning related, and then economic development.
All right.
And anything else that...
Yes. And any other.
is there a big issue that someone listened to this like, well, I don't understand. I don't know what any of those words you guys meant. I don't know what revenue sharing is. I don't know what, a lot of that stuff is. Is there something like bills that you're working on that maybe they've seen or they actually, oh, okay, now something that they can actually put their hands around or mind around?
Well, I think everybody's familiar with the state budget and what the state does with their budget every year. And within that budget, there are a whole number of different areas that involve money that flows to local units, whether that's revenue sharing from the state, whether that's funding for our courts, and Jen's been working on some of the indigent defense standards that are required for our courts to pay. There's fire protection grant money that goes to communities that host state facilities. There's money kind of squirreled away everywhere, road dollars, all of the money flowing from the state's Act 51 gas tax or registration fees comes through the MDOT budget. So that's one where when people think about the budget, ingrained throughout that budget are line items that impact local units.
Right. Well, let's talk about road funding, because that is obviously an issue that a lot of people know, the poor condition of the roads. What have we done or you guys done as a organization or as a group of people to try to get more road funding for our communities? Is there anything you can do or from your perspective?
Yeah, it's a nonstop conversation that we have all the time. One, we're still woefully underfunded, even with what the state's done in the current package. We don't have enough to do much more than filling potholes, quite frankly.
Right.
And so as a result, we've hammered that message left and right with legislators. And I think, for the listeners out there, making sure they understand, as Chris was talking about, the budget seems very large at $56, $57 billion, but the discretionary amount that legislators have is only about 20% of that.
Okay.
So it's very limited in their resources that they can actually put towards roads, so encouraging them to get out and do more is the key.
And what's the road need as far as what's the dollar figure that's out there?
Oh, so there's a lot of different estimates out there, but by and large, the number's just over $2 billion more dollars we need on an annual basis to invest in the road and bridge infrastructure, and about double that in all of our infrastructure, which includes water, sewer, and otherwise.
Okay. And that's despite everything that was done 2 years ago, following a 10-year push to get the most recent gas tax increase.
Okay.
I mean, we're still not where we need to be in terms of providing the funding to get there.
Right. And we serve, the Michigan Municipal League serves communities, mayors, city council members, managers are all our members. We work for them. What are some of the issues that you're working on behalf of our communities right now that you're fighting for?
So a lot of times we are working on preemption, so attacks on local control.
And what does that mean? Preemption means that what?
Saying that locally you can't do things, that the state's going to decide. It's usually a one-size-fits-all. A couple of examples. Over the last year or two, plastic bags.
Yeah.
The state banned locals regulating plastic bags.
So the state told locals you couldn't tell, like, grocery stores and stuff that you couldn't charge an extra dime or something for a plastic bag.
Correct. But no one was actually in Michigan doing that.
Yeah. Because I was in San Francisco recently. They do that all the time. Every store.
It's a, you know, environmental, looking environmentally forward. But no one was actually doing it. But we passed a law to say you can't regulate plastic bags or plastic containers.
All right. I saw today on the news that Seattle was banning all plastic silverware and plastic straws.
Yeah, straws is a big one.
And that's going to be a big thing. And I noticed in California they have it. You think that that's our next? You think you'll see some lawmakers passing stuff here to kind of stop that from happening?
They already have. So plastic covers straws, bags, containers.
Well, it's all covered.
Yep.
Okay.
And we see that all the time. In fact, it's kind of a joke, running joke. Every time a bill comes up, one of the first questions we ask in committee is, okay, well, who in Michigan's actually doing that? And 9 times out of 10, the answer is, well, nobody, but it's happening in Massachusetts, or it's happening in Chicago, or it's happening in Philadelphia, so we got
to
stop it here.
Yeah.
We like
and
to
apparently
say
that means it's wrong.
It's right.
A lot of solutions in search of problems.
Thank you. So do you, someone was just here removing our silverware. Sorry, I was distracted for a second. So, you know, that whole issue of kind of the erosion of local control. I'm director of communications for the league. I handle a lot of our media calls, and we get calls on that all the time. It seems like, is this a trend right now, or is this something we're always constant battling? Is it worse now than it's been?
I think, you know, it is a constant battle. Yeah. I mean, it's going back through my 20-plus years working around the legislature, it's always been there. I think we've seen more and more lately. I do think it's maybe ramping up a little bit, but it's certainly nothing new. It's something that is really a core function of what we do, advocating on behalf of local units all the time. A giant chunk of that is protecting against preemption and stripping away local control.
Yeah. Well, so why are they going after these little issues? I can hear a normal taxpayer probably saying, now, don't they have bigger issues to tackle? I'm sure you guys probably ask yourselves the same questions, but what do you think's happening?
Yeah, I mean, one, they do have bigger issues to tackle. That's the honest truth.
Have we talked about roads?
Yeah, I mean, it's out there, right? But, you know, the bottom line is I think in a lot of times they think that they know best, but it's through a business lens. Okay. A lot of times what they look at it, not necessarily from a local resident or a citizen lens. It's how do we become more competitive in businesses? And I'm sure you've talked about it on other podcasts. It's not low regulation and taxes that gets it done anymore. We need to focus on concentrating on place, and that assault on local control doesn't allow us to do that.
Right.
And in Michigan, our communities are unique. And the issues they face and then the way they come up with solutions for those issues are all different.
Right, like each individual community has different issues.
And so a lot of times the one size fits all at the state level does not work when it locally. Because when you make the change locally for the regulation and then you tie the locals' hands, now when the issue bubbles up, they can't really do anything. And local constituents, citizens of that municipality, want to see change the local level. They don't understand that the state has tied their hands.
Right.
And Jen's right. A lot of times this isn't a citizen sort of initiated issue where they're coming in saying, hey, you know, this is what my community's doing. I want you to stop them from doing it. This is much broader than that. A lot of times, as Chris mentioned, a national look of what's going on and policies that are produced and pushed by outside interest groups to limit what influence we have at the local government level, which is a real shame.
The other thing we see a lot of is we'll call them one-offs. You know, a situation will occur in one community, and something where a simple conversation, if that legislator would come and talk with us, we could intercede and work with that community to address that issue. But a lot of times what we see is those things will pop up in an area or something will happen in one place, and, well, there ought to be a law. And there we see a bill introduced, and it takes and addresses that one specific situation in that community, but makes a one-size-fits-all for the whole state.
Right.
And that's not a great solution.
Unintended consequences. We're always trying to look at what else happens because of that one little change for that one little.
And that happens a lot, where they trying to fix something, and then they mess up some other things to do it.
Yes.
So explain to me a little bit how the you know, kind of our system of government works. You know, we have our local government. I think, you know, we've done a lot of surveys and stuff that people value most, you know, the services they get locally, their police and fire protection, their parks, their, you know, sidewalks. And so, of course, our city council, our township boards, our village boards, they kind of govern those things. But they can only do so much, right? Because the state has, like we talk about this issue of local control, the state puts a lot of handcuffs on what communities can do and can't do. Is that right? Or explain that to me.
Absolutely. I mean, we're certainly a state where we're at the core level, at the constitutional level, we value local control. You know, the Supreme Court's even validated that many times with looking at our local units as kind of a core service provider. As you move up the food chain throughout the government levels, there's really no one else that provides the day-to-day level of services like a city or a village does. And I think that, you know, that is something that we try and communicate all the time with legislators. You know, just the difference. You know, we're on the ground every day providing services every day that interact with residents, and there needs to be an understanding of that and an acceptance of that and an embracing of that. Right. And there's not always that understanding.
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about this erosion of local control, which is something we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. But the bottom line is we still need the state to be partners with us if we want to be successful.
Right.
And that's really ultimately what we want to get to at the end of the day, is partnering with them to find solutions, not fighting with them on issues that may have, you know, little relevance currently in our situation, or maybe a one-off, as Chris mentioned.
Okay. Now, one thing I think impacts your job a lot, of switching topics here a little bit, is the issue of term limits. You know, we hear this a lot. Our state lawmakers are term limited. You can explain what they are. I don't know the exact specifics. But what kind of impact does that have on your job and as far as trying to serve communities?
So you have 110 state representatives in the House,
yeah,
in Michigan. And you have 38 members of the Senate in Michigan. They are... Both chambers are subject to term limits. No one representative can serve more than three terms, 6 years in the House, and no one senator can serve more than two terms, or 8 years in the Senate. And so that really limits, as you look at especially 6 years in the House and two-year terms of office, limits someone's ability to get acclimated and understand and then move up into a leadership role and kind of start running that entity and making policy for the
state.
And
just like any job, there's a learning curve, right?
You got to learn. Absolutely. We see time and time again, it takes sometimes until that fourth or fifth year before you really see lawmakers in the House being able to understand, comprehend, and run with an issue. And then... you lose them at the end of that.
Right. And when you try to explain complex subjects like, you know, revenue sharing and personal property tax and things like that, it gets difficult.
We have a lot of the same conversations over and over and over again. We're looking at this year turnover, some pretty major turnover expected in the Senate.
Yeah.
I think over two-thirds of that chamber will be term limited out. And then you're going to see an influx of folks from the House moving up to the Senate, and then you'll have those vacant seats in the House.
Okay.
I think over 40 seats in
the
House?
Yeah, I think it was around 45 in the House.
So that kind of leads up to my next question. Right now we're kind of on a summer break at the House and Senate. A lot of them are campaigning for office for the August primaries, and then we got the November general election. So there could be a lot of change coming up, right?
There will be.
And what kind of impact does that have on you? Because I know... for our listeners, there's like a lame duck period, I guess, after they're elected in November. So explain a little bit what that is and what that means for you guys and potentially for communities.
Yeah, lame duck means very little sleep. close to divorce if I don't get home to have dinner with my wife and kids.
At least once a week.
I mean, it's a pretty intense time. I mean, it's a three-week time period where, based on how the election goes, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And you go back to term limits, Matt. That's a product of term limits, too, a little bit, how much more intense lame duck has come, because as people are on their way out the door, they want to get their last thing in,
all these years, and all of a sudden they're trying to get everything done in like a matter of a couple
of weeks. And that's just a portion of the problem with term limits. Not to go back to that too much, but to simplify what Chris said, it hasn't been good.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't. You know, it's forced legislators to focus much more on their own district and the things that they do at home, rather than having a statewide approach to things. And I think we see a lot of negative impacts as a result.
And as a statewide organization, that probably causes you some problems.
And again, not that legislators shouldn't be taking care of their districts, but they're also responsible for policy for the whole state.
Yes.
and you lose some of that. You lose some of that ability to really dive into an issue and understand those unintended consequences. Those
at 1 o'clock in the morning, it's hard to dive into an issue.
Right, and they will do that. They'll turn around a 40-page bill in a few hours, and you guys are supposed to digest it and give it a stance
if we see
on it, or if you even see it.
Yeah. I mean, there's many times when we don't see it. All of a sudden, it's passed and sitting on the governor's desk, and we talk about that all the time. Sometimes that leads to lawsuits, too, and that's a bad situation not only to be in as a lobbying team and the efforts we go through, but a really, really difficult situation for our members to be in.
Well, we had that happen last time with what Chris penned as the gag order bill, right, where they
Correct.
They changed some tweaks to the things you had to do regarding meetings and or explain what that was real quick.
Yeah, so the legislature was doing a bill on campaign finance changes, and they added a bill at the last minute. It did a change to a bill at the very last minute in the second chamber, right before the end. Took a bill from about a dozen pages up to 40-some pages. No one saw it ahead of time. Everyone's already gone home because it's the last bill at the end of the night.
Yeah.
And that bill basically told communities you could not say anything on any millage question for local funding. You could not notify your residents or educate your residents at all on any of those issues coming up, regardless of what type of an issue it was.
Right.
And we had a couple of communities, and it happened right before an election date, so we had a couple of communities step up and say, no, that's not appropriate, and won, and the state's under a permanent injunction.
Yeah, because we had to take him to court, like John was saying, had to take him to court. Right. So, waving your crystal ball, what do you think this November is going to be like, particularly what major issues are going to be tried to touched or attacked or handled or whatever the right word is there?
Well, you certainly have a number of major ballot questions out there
Yes.
that could impact policy as we look at what happens post-election. Potentially up to 5 different ballot questions will be on the ballot in addition to the officials who are being elected. Then you have outstanding issues that have been talked about for a number of years on auto insurance no-fault reform. What happens with that?
Okay.
There's always tax issues that are coming up and we're dealing with. Infrastructure.
Yeah, still conversations about infrastructure. The governor is pushing a couple of different fees with the legislature, neither one of which has a lot of momentum right now. But if you look at lame duck, all of a sudden that could change in a heartbeat.
Okay. And then, people listening to this, they want to learn more. They want to follow us. We have a blog. Tell us a little bit about what the blog is and where they can find updated information about what's happening in Lansing.
So we run Inside 208.
Yep. So on the League's webpage, if you look over on the right-hand side, Inside
208. The webpage is mml.org.
Yes. Yep. Click on that, and you can enter your email address, and then that's where we like to share issues to keep our members up to date what's going on in Lansing, or if we need them to get active on an issue and talk to their legislators. And it's really a lot of informational, sharing of what's going on. But also we also try to share when there are funding opportunities or different updates from different state departments that we, are good partners with. We try to share information through that as well. It's hard to get another email, I'm sure, but this one is one you want to have and want to look at.
And that's something I want to maybe draw on a little bit as we talk with our members. We are 3 lobbyists working on behalf of over 520 cities and villages and urban townships across the state.
Following how many bills?
Right. So we have a voice, but that collective voice from our members is so much more important. So the more that council members and mayors and managers and department directors at the local level can engage and talk with and meet regularly with their elected officials, the more power that gives us as an organization, the bigger our voice is in Lansing.
Right. You mentioned that you guys are lobbyists. What do your friends say when you tell them you're lobbyists? Is that a dirty word?
I don't tell them what I do.
You don't? What are you, like CIA?
We're advocates.
When I go home, I want to avoid all politics, right?
Same.
All right.
I refuse to watch national politics, national news.
Or I tell them I'm an advocate.
Okay, that
right?
sounds good.
Right?
I support cities.
Right.
Communities. All right. Well, thank you guys, Chris, John, and Jen. Thank you for joining us here on Michigan Politics. Huh? Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.